morning, Mr. Boyle.
Good morning, Mr. Sheckman. How are you today?
Not too bad yourself.
Is this the flag for Colombia?
No, that's Ecuador, actually.
Is it made of toast?
Don't be silly. You know, I think we've gotten a bit off track lately with the various things. Toast creations and all. And I've asked Jeremy to go back to basics. So we took a break. Give him a bit of time to think. And, well, he's come out with his new toast line. It's the Bare Essentials.
And what does that mean for my toast?
Well, firstly, it's no more accents. Jeremy is now fully Italian. There's no more radioactive elements, hidden metal inserts, no non-bread accoutrements. Really, it's just toast that's done well.
And so where is my toast then?
Well, okay. So, I mean, yes, there's toast. No, there's not. See, that toast in front of you, that's my toast. Yeah.
Once more, where is my toast?
Well, I had a bunch of other stuff kind of left over. You imagine it sort of developed sentience. It's currently exploring Ecuador in an attempt to discover the meaning of its own life. And so it sent you the flag as a souvenir. It's a sort of a con toastador special, I guess. Or as close as we could get the sentient toast to be. Toasting the sunshine, shaking Michael Burr.
Fun fact. Ooh. Have you heard of Richard Feynman?
The name does sound familiar.
Physicist and sort of end of World War II. He wrote the book, The Pleasure of Finding Things Out. It's a fantastic read of scientific things. But anyway, going to one of the things there, he starts off one chapter, and this is called Scientists Are Not Poets. And he gives an example, and I thought this got my brain sort of bubbling. He said, all right, so a scientist reads this. A paper was published, and it was titled, The Radioactive Phosphorus Content of the Cerebrum of a Rat Decreases to 1/2 in the period of 2 weeks. Okay. Now, a scientist reads that and gets amazed. But he says, what would a poet do if they were a scientist? And effectively what that means, and I mean it's kind of known now, is that many atoms, not only the cells are made of atoms.
Yes.
That means that the atoms of your brain are being replaced quite frequently. Because the phosphorus doesn't disappear.
Yeah.
It's replaced.
Yes.
So what that means is that, would you agree, Mr. Sheckman, that you are an individual? And I am an individual. So what that means is that your and my individuality is a pattern or a dance. Atoms come into your brain, into my brain. They dance a dance, and then they go out. And it's always new atoms, but always doing the same dance. And remembering what was done yesterday. You think, so every 2 weeks, lots of atoms, so your brain's continuously being replaced, but you can remember things. And it's like, that's how a scientist,
exactly.
One of those substantial things you think, so how is it you can remember your first little paper airplane throw if everything in your brain has been replaced? And the memory stays. It boggles your mind. Anyway, that was...
Okay, but in some ways, it almost brings us to an interesting sort of point. In from the scientific terminology, which in many ways is what we cover in courses, is what we cover in your thermodynamics, even in design, to many degrees, there are set terminological points.
Yes.
Design constraint, a requirement, iteration, reflection, so on and so forth.
A synthetic subminimum. No, that I'm just joking.
I'll add it to the list and just put a note, Seabrook. The other side to it, however, is when learning how to do design. Or even actually, I mean, because we're always learning, to be honest. It is a skill that atrophies, as we say over and over and over. There needs to be ways of viewing it in a way that makes sense to you.
Yes.
So the first statement you came up with, the rack with the phosphor and stuff, it's the broad first initial detail.
Yes, it's a fact that was done by somebody else.
Yes.
And you look at it and it is just a set of words.
It is just a set of words, and it's the base fundamentals of a set of understanding that can then develop from that point.
Yes.
And what in many ways we need to do, almost poetically, but not, you know, I'm not saying we have to go off now and be poets, but we have to then put it in a way that we can understand.
Yes.
If that's a way a poet can then understand it, and then you can say it in a unique way that gives you extra insight into it. I hadn't thought about the fact that your brain is basically dissolving and reforming itself, not quite, but thereabouts, over and over. Hang on, what does that mean for memory? What could that mean for us? And, you know, how that can then step into other ideas. And in many ways, that's something that needs to happen on a more continual basis to almost rethink. I mean, if we go back to, a couple of weeks back when we talked about accuracy and precision.
Yes.
And then we talked about the localizational type person and the, I can't remember the other
one. The inspirationalist and yes. The boring one, or the proceduralist.
That's the one, yes. These are different ways of thinking, and it makes us even think of then design in unique ways. So, long story short, it has now come to the end of the year.
It has.
Courses are done, and there is at least, let's call it a 3 to 4 month gap, before anyone, any student, is being forced to, at the very least, start some design work again.
Correct. On top of all the other course crunch that occurs.
Exactly. And while you might start a new course, you might start, you know, structures, you might start some kind of...
Or restart structures.
Hello, my old friend. You don't want to have to put design on top of that because it's not a procedural, right, this is how you analyze this stress, you must keep this in mind, this is how the layers, 40 degree, 90 degree of composites and so on. Design is something where it's just a way of thinking.
It is a way of thinking, but you also have to go through the motions. So quite a lot of what we do is talking about design.
Yeah.
The point is, it's... If you don't even do that, then you can become extremely slow, extremely rusty, and extremely narrow focused.
Oh, hell yes.
And so, I mean, what we're trying to say is that, you know, there are things that you can do during the obviously there might be things like vacation week, there might be holidays,
yeah,
there might be, you know, friends and family, etc. But what sort of things can you do so that when you do have to do design with all of the courses, you end up doing design correctly, quite fast, quite, let's call it, accurate rather than precise.
Yes. Okay, so first thing I'd say is it shouldn't be seen as necessarily an activity that is done on the side. It's not, okay, I'm on the holiday with the family or I'm visiting some friend. Right, sorry, if you want to give me an hour, I need to go off and think about how
I need to make a URS.
Exactly, yeah. So for me, it's one of those sort of things that it's just, good design is solving a problem.
That's all it is.
9 times 10 for me, it's noting problems. It's problem identification is a major aspect.
It is. It's one of the fun things you can do. You can stop at a petrol stop on the way to holiday, and you might just have a look at somebody who's put like extra luggage up on top, and you think that's interesting. But in a crosswind, I wonder about the CG of the trail and how that would behave, type thing with drag coefficients. And you might just walk up and have a look at it, and it just gets you thinking. And that's good enough.
And that's it. It's the thinking in that sort of technical side. If you're taking on engineering design, you're effectively taking on a way of life. Unfortunately, engineers are not, you know, we're not poets. We are a particular breed of scientist in a way.
Yes.
That... views the world in a particular way that allows us to solve problems in unique manners.
I was going to say in a sarcastic way, but yes. In a unique way.
whatever way it helps. For me, sarcasm helps hell of a lot.
It does.
How I cope. So it's noting and almost trying to say, okay, what would happen in this situation? What would happen now if I needed to get that luggage out the back of my car or the back of the taxi? Or what is a better way of packing? What other way could I have stored items in this particular manner? It can grow to other things. It can just being at home and, you know, someone you're working with or someone you're living with is in having an issue where, you know, they've got a sore back or something and they can't get up the stairs. Okay.
Yes.
What is the actual problem? I mean, is it the stairs? Is it that actually maybe the problem is the way they're sleeping? And I mean, 9 times out of 10, it's you'll find that you end up solving problems. You don't have to use your mechanical. It doesn't have to be a mechanical system. It could just be logically, well, you slept with a pillow under your rear lower back. Now, no wonder that you're sitting in some kind of arched over thing.
Exactly.
Who saw that coming? We can almost look at the various elements of design. What other elements of design can there be practiced?
So there's definitely the and it's one of the things that is quite a difficult skill to learn, but is the what is the real problem, which we call the sort of problem identification, problem definition type thing. There's also the thing of how would you solve the problem that you can see. So, for example, you're going along the road and there's a truck on the side of the road that's on its side.
Yeah.
And you have a look at it and you think, this is in the middle of nowhere. It's like 40Ks the nearest. How do you, what are you going to use to pick up that truck while keeping the N3 open? Because you could, one, bring in a Johnson crane.
Yeah.
But it's an articulated truck that's gone down a thing. How would you get the crane down to pick up the truck? And also, would you then unpack the truck while it's on the side before doing it? What kind of truck was it? Was it transporting beer? Was it transporting people's valuables? If it was a shipping container, what could be in the shipping container? Where could it have come from? You know, there are those sorts of things.
Yeah.
And literally, you'll drive past this thing, and that's what will be happening in my brain is, how do you fix that?
Yeah.
What? How do you do that without stopping everyone? And also, how long would it take if I was the crane driver? It would be an accident clip worthy of a Jeremy Clarkson clip, because it would be how fast and how much power can you use to lift this thing up? Or is it a thing of use the crane to get like multiple forklifts and things down in the felt next to the truck to help push and pull? Do you use inflatable airbags? It's one of those things that you could literally amuse yourself for the next 40 kilometers thinking, how the hell would you? And then what caused it?
Yeah. But I think the biggest one to have, and I think it's one of the issues that we see in our students, is when you're coming out with these ideas, when you're saying forklift, you'd actually stop and say, wait, we are nowhere near any sort of civilization.
The nearest forklift must be where? Where would the nearest
forklift be? So you can start to think what we would determine as practically by just putting yourself in the situation, right, okay, that slope is 45 to 60 degrees. Vehicles that would go on that, it's putting yourself in that sort of position of knowing big picture thinking, not just, right, exactly, we can have this moment on, we can lift, we can push here. It's, what is there in this area? Like, how would I have actually solved this problem? What information, how would I have found out about this environment? Other than having been here in this particular situation, what would I be looking for? Right, I need to know weather. Okay, where would I get the weather information from? Where would I get pictures? All right, so the news would probably post pictures of the accident on the side of the road. Okay, so we'd get that, look at local newspapers or local news sites. What is the training the driver got? You know, how did it happen? Maybe we could preempt the accident happening in the first place. And it's almost putting yourself in the situation so you can start to think what could actually be done. Because in many ways, having driven past it or being stuck in that traffic accident,
yes,
if you happen to have been in that queue, you're in it. You've now got that, in many ways, first-hand experience noted for yourself. And say, okay, how else would I have got this?
That's true. You also might find, and everyone's a little bit different in how to think about it. I'm definitely more of a, I mean, I like the analytical side of things, but I generally try and bypass that if possible and dive into the synthesis stuff on a conceptual level without free body diagrams. I'll do the free body diagrams if I don't quite understand it, but I'll synthesize something. So, for example, if we're thinking about, you're definitely going to have to pick this thing up. But then another idea is it better just to get a crew of spanners and just like dismantle the truck where it is and then just like rebuild it somewhere else, something as I do with like crashed aircraft. And then there's a thing of, well, if you made some mental observations of estimate how far down the truck is and how far across it is, and then sort of just do like some basic stuff of, if the crane is over here and the truck weighs 60 tons, how far over would you need the cable to be, like what kind of arm length on the crane and what kind of moment at the base, and are the legs maybe long enough? Those are the sorts of things that some students might say, I wonder if it is even possible. Maybe you need four cranes, because with the amount of boom arm angle, it's you can only pick up 5 tons per crane. Okay, now we've got a space problem because you're going to need 12 cranes.
Yeah, do we put them on the other side of the highway and reach over? Do we have them on that?
Do we use cranes to park cranes down there? Is like, how, you know, you just stop to think, and you know that's the sort of person that might say, I don't know, let me try and work out how far apart, what force needs to be applied, how far out to pick the thing up. And also, if you were to pick up a truck, how do you pick it up?
Exactly.
Do you just like put some lashings around it? I mean what about the drive shaft? What about the wheels? What about the, can you just strap a truck and pick it up?
Was it designed for that? You know, I mean, if you then start getting back here, when I design a trailer, do I expect someone to throw lashings underneath the thing to pick it up?
Yes, it's also got a diesel engine, which is compression ignition. It will have oil in the bottom. If you park it on its side or upside down, I guess you can't just put the key in and turn it. You'll get hydraulic lock in the things. All those sorts of things.
Yeah, exactly.
What about wheel alignment? You know, obviously you're not going to get the thing up and drive it. And I think that's the sort of thing where you could literally doodle. You could go and sit on the beach and have a beer and get a nice sunburn while thinking about this and looking for dolphins and all that sort of nonsense.
And okay, so in part, okay, so there's a couple things there to break down with that. One, it's that idea of doing some of the base fundamental maths. What is the moment arm here? What is that distance? It's giving you practice with estimating distances and stuff like that. It's giving you practice with doing base calculations, which is something we do in design, and the quicker you can do it in your head, you're almost getting practice for that.
You don't have to have the calculator with you. You just have to run through how would you do it and how would you make sure you haven't left something out, which, I mean, just remember that, you know, we always say that everything that you need to be an engineer is basically found in a physics book, which means the very basics of forces, the very basics of physics, everyone understands the basics of pressure, it's force and area.
Yeah.
You don't need to know, I need to use Thwaites' theorem to integrate over a... No. You know, you don't have to do sort of that level of things.
But then there's the other side to it where... Okay, so personal experience, in my second year, we had to design power pylons. Not the most creative design projects, but it's one that tested a lot of the base fundamentals and a great way to apply a lot of theory. However, certainly at that time, I would do a lot of driving between Joburg and Durban.
I would argue that if you don't have any power to transmit, you don't need power pylons, but carry on the story.
For those intermittent moments when Eskom doesn't know what it's doing. Good God. Okay. And the problem is, driving down to Durban, there are a considerable amount of those bloody structures all over the place. And what you end up doing is you're like, oh, hang on. And your brain immediately starts kicking in. Okay, there's that trusted. Why would they do it that way? I wouldn't have analyzed that force in that. I wouldn't have put the structure there. There must be a guy cable there. How would I connect it? And you find yourself getting angry in second year. It's like, why can I not shut off? Why can I not think about this stuff? It's not about like wanting to shut off and stuff. It's finding the stuff you enjoy. So, okay, fine. You don't want to think about the power pylons and stuff like that. But the fact that it almost encourage yourself to be thinking about those sort of things. Encourage yourself to, because it is a way of thinking that if you keep up with it, design becomes easier and easier and easier in subsequent years.
You're right. I mean, that's one of the things, that one of my things I tend to do while driving is wherever a farmer has installed a windmill,
okay,
I tend to look at, and why did they choose that?
Yes.
And it's one of those things where, well, quite often the windmill, there's, the, let's say, a light breeze, but the windmill is spinning like there's no tomorrow. And you think, well, local knowledge, but also if the wind blows from here, it gets funneled up that little mound of thing. Plus, obviously, there is water there. You only put a windmill where there's water.
Yes,
It comes like directly up and down from it. But you need to know wind, you need to know water, which means you're looking for a full moon on a Wednesday morning with a high tide. That's your perfect location for a windmill.
Mm.
And yet, these windmills are all in those locations. And the thing is, how did they, and can you figure it out by looking at the terrain with the case of, because I don't know anything about groundwater.
No.
But understand a little bit about how air blows and stuff, having played in the Wind Tunnel, etc. And it's a thing of, would I have put the windmill there? Yeah, I think it's a really good place for it. You know, and sometimes they're at the bottom of a valley and you think, that's a smart one, because everyone knows that, well, if you did geography at school, when the sun goes down, you get cool, you get that sort of descending catabatic wind that like howls down through valleys. What that will do is that will pump up in the evening, so the water is available for the animals in the morning. It's clever.
And I think what's great about looking at real world things is, for the majority of the time, unless someone's really made a mistake, the answer that you're looking at, or the thing you're looking at, is the answer. Where to put the windmill, that's where you put the windmill.
And it's a great engineering design skill. There's a case of, well, there is the final concept.
Yes.
Fully specified. Yep. How did they work backwards?
Exactly.
Right, I've got a windmill. It's this high above the ground because of the earth boundary layer in this particular location. Mm-hmm. It's that size because torque required and the water depth and stuff. Why there? Can you figure out all those sorts of things? Why would the windmill not be higher? Maybe there's a legal height thing for health and safety. Maybe if it's above that, you then need a professional client. Okay, maybe there's that. You know, all those sorts of things. You know, the taller you make the windmill, the more risk you've got for buckling and all that sort of stuff. You know?
Yeah, no, exactly. It's questioning. And if you think you do it a different way, okay, cool. It's almost right. We know that one works. And in many regards, especially understanding how established technology, a windmill is a properly established technology. Yes. It's not something new. It's not solar panels on all roofs and things like that. I think you could say, okay, well, they put solar panels there. You'd almost take it with a, well, I'd maybe put them elsewhere, and maybe it's a new enough idea that people haven't tested out all the wrong ways of doing it.
Correct.
A windmill, they've tested out the wrong places of putting it, then they didn't get water, and those were disassembled, destroyed, left alone. You know, that windmill that is collapsed and broken and things like that. Okay, it could be because the land is no longer being used or whatever.
Or there's no more water left there, or whatever it is.
Exactly.
Farmer sold it.
Yeah. But nevertheless, the issue, the thing is that it is still something that at one point necessarily worked. So it gives you that target point. The problem with design, many cases, especially when we say you're solving a complex engineering problem, is there is no target. If there was, the problem is solved, arguably.
Exactly.
So use time when looking around. Those are solutions. Those are solutions that in many regards work. Maybe you could think of a better way of doing it. Though be careful with a statement like that. But otherwise, they are solutions that work. So, okay, cool. How would you have got to that point?
Mm.
It's not copying. It's not just plagiarizing, saying, I'll just do what they do.
Yeah.
But it's understanding so that if you were in a new position, if you're trying to put a windmill on Mars, if you're trying to put a power generation system under the ocean, so, I mean, fundamentally, the windmill is, okay, it's not a power turbine, but it can be in that case. What principles did they look at, and what principles should I be looking at? Like how many obstacles, how many trees do you see surrounding windmills and stuff at windmill height? Obviously, there might be lower trees and hedges and stuff like that. Okay, cool. So if we're putting our turbine under the ocean, I'm not going to do it right near a coral reef or anything like that.
Or right near swimmers or something like that. And I think, I think that's also the nice thing is that, you know, for the third years going into fourth year, this is the time where you've got time to come up with a whole lot of what could be fairly complex problems that when it comes to fourth year project proposal time, you might have 10 or 15 nice juicy ideas of your own, which are then kind of well thought about so that, you know, you don't end up doing it the day before where it's like, I need to create a problem.
Yeah, exactly. And look at what's on your desk.
Now I'm going to try and force it and you know, do the standard thing of, well, some kid got their finger pinched in a shopping trolley, therefore shopping trolleys need to be designed for kids or something like that, which is a sort of ridiculous type thing. So, you know, and I think you just have to open your eyes and have a look. I noticed fairly recently that if you travel sort of outside your own sort of sphere, a lot of people have made extensive changes during the COVID years. And quite a lot of that stuff is now there, but it's not being utilized, or else being utilized for different things. And you think, well, why don't you keep doing that sort of cyclical change? Currently, a whole lot of people are doing the thing of off-grid, or do we stick it out? Is the power situation going to get better, or is it stage two for the next 50 years? And what are we going to do about it? Have a look at what's happening, and you'll find that all sorts of things like bed and breakfasts, hotels, restaurants. A restaurant, I mean, I was thinking about this. What the hell does a bread bakery do with load shedding? Because there is no alternative. You can't make bread by not baking it. And what about chip factories? Deep frying and fast food restaurants?
Anything with heat that it requires so much energy, it's not...
You can't use solar for it.
No,
you
know, exactly.
You think a petrol station, well, you could deck the top with it, because petrol pumps are not high-powered things based on their flow rates and things like that. So yes, you can. But a restaurant kitchen, you could use solar to do the lighting. You might even be able to do some ventilation stuff. But
oil, water, stuff like that.
You might be able to run an urn or fit, but you're not going to be able to run your ovens and stoves and things like that. Unless it's one of those weird restaurants which is, say, closed during the day and open for a short period at night, which is you would store the stuff.
Yes.
You know, so there... You know, you can have a look at it, but then also have a look at what people have done for their off-grid solutions. And it's a case of, well, if there's some JoJo tanks up on the hill, well, all they've done is used solar to replace windmills.
Yeah.
And having driven through the Free State, there's a hell of a lot of tech involved in that sort of thing. So windmills, all you notice is the windmill is derelict, but right next to it is a square meter solar panel with a little tiny quiet pump. And you've just replaced the tech with something which, well, in the Free State sun is fine.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well, anyway, food for thought. It's certainly something to
don't
keep
choke on it.
Yeah. But if you do, think about how you'd solve that problem. Otherwise, yeah, keep yourself busy during breaks and stuff like that. Obviously, take a break. You need to clear your head. But it doesn't mean that clearing your head, you know, so it's clearing your head.
Don't empty your head.
Yeah, exactly. Nicely put. All right. And on that note, catch you in the next one. Cheers.